Welcome to Text Messages. These recommendations for teen readers are produced by ReadWriteThink.org, a partnership between the National Council of Teachers of English and the International Reading Association. This is episode 61 of Text Messages, Latino Literature for Teens. I'm your host, Jennifer Bueller. One of the things that can make reading powerful is the feeling of being seen, of finding your life reflected in the pages of a book. Reading can also be powerful when it pulls you out of your comfort zone and gives you insight into the lives of others. Today's young adult literature makes both of these ways of reading possible. While there's no denying that the majority of YA titles still focus on the experience of white middle-class teens, a growing number explore the lives of teens of color. El Día de los Niños marks the importance of these books, particularly those that feature people from Spanish-speaking countries and cultures. Created by children's author Pat Mora and first celebrated in 1997, El Día emphasizes the importance of literacy for children from all backgrounds. Along with the Pura Belpre Award, which was established by the American Library Association in 1996, El Día celebrates the Latino cultural experience in literature for children and youth. In honor of El Día, in this episode, I'll introduce you to a variety of books written by Latino authors about Latino teens. Because they're so different from one another, these books remind us that seeing yourself in the pages of a book is not just a matter of seeing characters with your same skin color. It's also a matter of hearing expressions from your native language or your parents' native language. It's noticing references to the food your family eats, your religious traditions, and your family's nation of origin. It's reconciling ties to homeland and managing cultural navigations in a white-dominated society. Sometimes it's watching a character struggle with issues that have nothing to do with ethnicity. Looking across these books, it's clear that there are as many ways of writing about Latino teens as being Latino. Because my goal in these podcasts is to introduce listeners to titles they haven't heard of before, this episode won't feature works by some of our best-known Latino and Latina authors. Listeners in search of additional titles should be sure to track down books by Margarita Engel, Francisco X. Stork, and Matt De La Peña. They should also check out Gary Soto, Pam Munoz-Ryan, and Guadalupe Garcia-McCall. Readers can update their lists each year in January when the newest winners of the Belpre Award are announced. For now, though, I have 8 titles to tell you about. Titles that will appeal to older as well as younger teens. Titles that explore the past as well as the present. Titles that feature teens living in the barrio as well as teens from middle-class families. I'll begin with 2 books that explore the pull of Latino heritage and history on teens living in the U.S. The first is The Revolution of Evelyn Serrano by Sonia Manzano, a wonderful book for younger readers. The setting is Spanish Harlem in the summer of 1969. 14-year-old Rosa has changed her name to Evelyn because it's the least Puerto Rican name she can think of. Evelyn is tired of her mother, tired of the Puerto Rican decor in their apartment, tired of working in the family bodega. Then one day she comes home to find a stranger in her kitchen. It's Abuela, her estranged grandmother from Puerto Rico, a woman with orange hair like Bozo the Clown and a larger-than-life personality. Abuela's arrival puts a series of events into motion that will change Evelyn, events which coincide with political change in Spanish Harlem. Out in the neighborhood, a gang called the Young Lords is setting fire to garbage cans, passing out flyers, and marching in the streets. But they're no ordinary gang. They're a Puerto Rican activist group trying to get the city to respond to their community's needs. While Evelyn's mother is scared of the Young Lords, Abuela joins their cause. Soon Evelyn realizes that their arguments over the Young Lords are actually arguments over family history, and the revolution that's unfolding in Spanish Harlem is tied to the revolution that occurred in Puerto Rico years before. Both events are tied to a quiet revolution that's unfolding in Evelyn's heart. The Revolution of Evelyn Serrano is a complex coming-of-age story that won a Pura Belpre Honor Award in January. In an afterword, author Sonia Manzano, who has played the role of Maria on Sesame Street for over 30 years, explains that Evelyn's story mirrors her own process of coming to consciousness as a Puerto Rican. She writes, "When we think of revolutions, we think of big public displays of violence. But revolutions come in all shapes and sizes. I've always been interested in people's internal revolutions, because those are the ones that govern their everyday actions, and by progression, a community's life." Another book that explores the pull of Puerto Rico on a teenage girl is If I Could Fly by Judith Ortiz Cofer. When the story begins, 15-year-old Doris is reeling from the fact that her mother has left the family. "She needs time to herself," Doris's father says. Neither of them know where she went or if she'll come back. Doris has always felt that her parents were more interested in their careers as musicians than in her. Still, her mother's disappearance is like a punch in the gut. Doris takes refuge on the roof of her apartment, where she tends to a flock of carrier pigeons and seeks counsel from Doña Iris, her neighbor and a local oracle. But meanwhile, life is volatile in her New Jersey barrio neighborhood. When Doris's friend Arturo is mugged and her other friend Yolanda is involved in a shooting, Doris's parents reconnect and intervene. They decide she will take a break and join her mother in Puerto Rico. Doris's trip provides her with the much-needed chance to reconnect with her mother and experience her home country, but big questions loom. What comes next? Will her mother ever return to the U.S.? And where is home? In the mid-1990s, when I began reading young adult literature in earnest, one of my favorite early discoveries was a Judith Ortiz Cofer short story collection called An Island Like You. I didn't know it at the time, but An Island Like You was the first ever winner of the Pirabel Prey Award. Doris, Arturo, and Yolanda are all characters from that book. With If I Could Fly, Cofer's storytelling is once again quiet and lyrical. I love the metaphors about birds in flight, and I appreciated Doris's nuanced struggle to figure out who she wants to be in the midst of two cultures that both claim her. The next two books I want to tell you about bring us back to Spanish Harlem, only here the focus is on teen characters who are actively looking for a way out of the barrio in the hopes of finding a better life. Dark Dude by Oscar Ihuelos tells the story of 15-year-old Rico, a boy who's struggling in his school and neighborhood, not so much because he's Cuban, but because he's a light-skinned Cuban. Guys on the street ridicule him for looking white, but other times he's the target of white racism. To escape, Rico loses himself in DC comic books and the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. When his older friend Gilberto leaves the neighborhood for a tiny college in Wisconsin, Rico sees an escape from shootings at school, drug dealers in the neighborhood, and his father's alcoholism. So Rico and his friend Jimmy run away to Wisconsin, where life is better, but not by much. Living with Gilberto on a farm provides a reprieve from urban crime and violence, but Rico knows there's no future working the night shift at a gas station. He's a talented student, and he wants to be a comic book artist. He says he feels half-assed at being Cuban, and yet in the white world of Wisconsin, he feels the pull of his Cuban roots. He wants to go home again and reconcile with his parents, if only he can find the courage to do so. What's interesting about Dark Dude is how contemporary it feels. It's actually a work of historical fiction set in the 1960s. But Rico's feeling of being both hassled and culturally isolated because of his race feels timeless. I'd give this book to any reader. It could be a read-alike for teens who like Walter Dean Myers or Matt De La Pena, but with its in-text references to Mark Twain and Jack Kerouac, it might also appeal to teens who like the classics, especially since Oscar Ihuelos was the first Latino to win the Pulitzer Prize for Literature with the Mambo Kings play Songs of Love. School provides a more direct form of escape for the main character of When We Was Famous, a new book by Greg Takaudis. Main character Francisco is a talented athlete and student. With the scholarship to prestigious Seton Hall Academy in Connecticut, he too can escape the streets of Spanish Harlem. But like so many stories about kids from urban settings who go off to boarding school, Francisco falls into a difficult struggle. He feels pulled home to his girlfriend and the boys he used to hang with. A part of him feels guilty for leaving them behind. At the same time, life at boarding school is uglier than he lets on. His roommates are openly racist. He encounters racial slurs on and off the basketball court. And soon enough, he becomes convinced he's only there to fill the school's diversity quota. Francisco's parents are Puerto Rican, but his identity struggle is as much about being an outsider from the hood as being Latino. Reluctant readers will find When We Was Famous very accessible. In an opening hook, it promises to be a story about romance, but not that kind of romance, and murder. The first scene takes place in a police station. Chapters are short and the action is fast-paced. An author's note explains the book's interesting genesis. Before it was a novel, it was a movie that emerged out of a writing workshop the author ran with teens in Spanish Harlem. Several of the books I read for this podcast feature Latino teens in stories that are inflected by cultural identity, but not driven by it. The first is a middle school novel that will come out later this year in June, Ask My Mood Ring, How I Feel, by Diana Lopez. Main character Erica is a typical eighth grader dealing with all the ordinary problems of eighth grade. An annoying, too-perfect sixth grade sister, a high-maintenance toddler brother, bad grades in math class, and the wish for a boyfriend. Then, in an instant, her world changes. First, she learns that her mother has breast cancer. Only days later, her mom undergoes a double mastectomy. Reeling from the sudden change brought on by her mother's illness, but inspired by her family's visit to the miracle room of a church in South Texas, Erica decides to make a promesa, or a promise to God. In exchange for her mother's health, Erica vows to recruit 500 sponsors for the annual Susan Komen Breast Cancer Walk. The book is partially driven by Erica's quest to fulfill her promesa, but it's equally the story of her quest to become her own person, to get out of her sister's shadow and get her own needs met in a stressed-out family. Erica is a hopeful and resilient character, and that makes for a hopeful and warm-hearted book. A darker story that impressed me with its emotional honesty is Yaki Delgado Wants to Kick Your Ass, written by Meg Medina and newly published this spring. The main character in this book isn't Yaki Delgado. It's Piedad, the unassuming honors student forced to enroll in a new high school when her mom abruptly moves them out of their decrepit apartment building in Queens. When a random classmate, a stranger, comes up to Pity and gives her this message before school, Yaki Delgado wants to kick your ass. Pity is dumbstruck. She doesn't even know who Yaki Delgado is. Darlene, a drama-loving student aide in the guidance office, soon fills in the details. Yaki thinks Pity is stuck up and Pity had better watch her back. And so the story unfolds, a classic novel about bullying. School for Pity becomes a miasma, a poison cloud that's eating her brain. She learns to live in fear of this girl she calls Hate on Two Feet. Pity finds comfort in her mother's friend Lila, but relations with her own mom are strained. Latinos get a bad rap, her mom reasons, so she tries to compensate by being extra quiet and polite all the time. That means Pity is left on her own to solve the problem of Yaki. Her struggle is bleak and unrelenting, at least for a time. But that's what makes this book worth reading. The characters are complex, the plot is suspenseful, and the story is powerfully written. I read the whole thing over the course of one busy day, stealing pages between classes and meetings, and rooting for Pity to triumph over her problems. The last book in this set is the most intense and the most heart-wrenching. It's the book least marked by Latino culture, but it's written by one of our most acclaimed Latino authors, Benjamin Alire Sáenz. Last Night I Sang to the Monster is not Sáenz's newest book, but it's one I'd been meaning to read for some time. How glad I am that I did. Set in El Paso, Texas, this sad and poetic novel is the story of a kid named Zach who's in rehab instead of in high school. He's also in pain. Zach can't remember the traumatic event that triggered his slide into alcoholism. His trauma is so acute that he can't remember much of anything. But his thoughts about himself and his life are raw and poignant. They give the book its sense of poetry. Chapters consist of short, meditative vignettes many of which are scenes of dialogue. Much of the action plays out in conversations between Zach and his therapist, or Zach and his fellow patients in group therapy. Readers who have an interest in counseling will be especially moved by these scenes. The arc of the story is Zach's journey toward healing, which is guided not only by his work in therapy, but also by his relationship with an older patient, Raphael, who becomes a father figure. Last Night I Sang to the Monster is a book for older teens, not because of its content, but because of its subtlety. It's quiet, deep, and beautifully written. There's one last book I want to tell you about in this episode, and it's so unusual, it doesn't fit into any of my other categories. Written by Xavier Garza, the book is Maximilian and the Mystery of the Guardian Angel, a bilingual lucha libre thriller. Winner of a Pura Belpre Honor Award just last year, it's a book for middle grade readers about wrestling. Only in this case, it's lucha libre wrestling, a kind of wrestling you find in Mexico. Lucha libre wrestlers are known as luchadores. Like superheroes, they wear masks and their real identities are secret. Main character Max is going into sixth grade, and his heroes are the luchadores. His favorite is the Guardian Angel, a wrestler so famous he's also a Mexican movie star. When that same Guardian Angel comes to wrestle in San Antonio, Texas, Max's hometown, and Max accidentally flips over the guardrail of the ring in the effort to touch his hero, Max and his uncle are called backstage after the match, where they find out that the Guardian Angel has a secret connection to their own family. Garza's book does several things at once. It pays homage to the lucha libre wrestling tradition. It tells the story in an illustrated bilingual format, and it draws in readers with a mystery plotline. Younger teens who love wrestling will certainly get excited about this book. Bilingual readers, or readers who wish they were bilingual, will also have a lot of fun with it. I hope you will read these books and recommend them to the teens in your life. Each title should be available at your local library or bookstore. Remember that no book is right for every reader, so preview books for appropriate reading level and content before passing them on to your teen. Next month, I'll be back to bring you a conversation with teen librarians Walter Mays and Mary Arnold. To celebrate the end of the school year and the possibilities for summer reading, Walter and Mary will talk about ways to motivate, engage, and support teen readers. They'll also offer a sampling of favorite YA titles they love to recommend. Until next time, I'm Jennifer Bueller. More episodes of Text Messages are available at readwritethink.org/textmessages. You can listen to our elementary book podcast, Chatting About Books, at readwritethink.org/chattingaboutbooks. Text Messages is supported by the Verizon Foundation through thinkfinity.org and produced monthly by the National Council of Teachers of English and the International Reading Association. Music in this podcast is courtesy of Scott Andrew. Thanks for listening and look forward to more Text Messages soon.